future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who would it now?
Welcome into the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. It is myself, Brian McDonald, Clutch City Cam, as you would find him on Twitter, Cam Smith here, as always. A little bit of a change to the rest of the lineup here. We're going to be switching it up pretty much every week. As I mentioned last week, Sean will join us once a month, and we're going to have a rotating number of guests come in who were part of the Rock the Mic competition, and our man behind the glass is a little bit different. Instead of John Bilmer, it is Swaggy Russ behind the mic. AJ's with us, who constantly makes me feel old because he's 17. I think we're breaking workplace laws here to get AJ on the show. But also with us, as I mentioned, from the Rock the Mic competition, you can find him on Twitter at 713HOU Sports. Ruben Gomez. Did I butcher that? Gomez? I think I got it right the second time. Okay. Well, welcome to the show, man. You did really well in the Rock the Mic competition. I'm part of the finalists there. I know you've been doing some stuff with Athletically Declined, mm-hmm. but welcome into the show. Thank you for coming in.
Man, thank you guys for having me on. This is fun. Let's get swarming.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Well, speaking of swarming, let's get with the Houston Texans, who had a bit of an eventful week, I would say. The Texans definitely weren't boring this week. I don't know if they did the things we wanted them to do, but they weren't boring. So you give them that. Team content was a win this week. But we got to start with the obvious thing, the Laremy Tunsil trade to the Washington Commanders, and what we make of this decision to trade Laremy Tunsil. Before we get into our own thoughts, we had on Matt Miller, ESPN draft expert on the Killer Bees. He's their main draft guy, well, besides Mel Kiper. And she shared these thoughts, a little bit questionable move to move your best offensive lineman. We already had a bad offensive line last year.
I think notably the weakness of this team last year was the offensive line, especially the interior offensive line. I didn't think Kenyon Green was a building block by any means, but it was surprising to see he and Laremy Tunsil gone. I think there's going to be a lot that comes out as to why those moves were made. But when you have something that wasn't a strength, I think it is questionable to trade your best player on that group in Tunsil.
So that's kind of where I come from this. Like, I see both sides of it, and I'm still not entirely sure on which side of it I will ultimately be on. But from the point of to kind of defend what Caserio did, like, if you're going to be a bottom three offensive line with Laremy Tunsil, like, how much was he really helping you overall? If you're already bottom three with him, plus you know he's going to want a new contract, and he had 2 years left on his deal. We know Laremy's very proactive and like, hey, man, I need a new contract. He set the left tackle, reset the left tackle market twice. And, you know, so he's got 2 years left on his contract. He wants a new deal. Maybe you're already bad with him. Why not get a couple of picks? You got a second and a third. Plus, give yourself some salary cap flexibility for this upcoming or the offseason they're currently in. So I get that side of it. But on the other side, how can you take a terrible offensive line, get rid of the best player you have on it, and expect to improve going into the next season? Where do you guys fall with this Laremy Tunsil trade, Cam?
I mean, I'm surprised they did it. I think that they got a really good like get back from it with all those picks, but like you said, they were already terrible. So, I mean, like,
it's kind of like the argument sometimes people make for MVP when especially in baseball, where they try to make it, like, for a long time, MVPs came from bad teams, like Alex Rodriguez when he's on the Rangers, yeah. Mike Trout when he was on the Angels. It's like, if you're a 60-win team with them, how valuable is he, really? The same thing with Laremy Tunsil. If you're the third worst offensive line in the league, I get he's good. The Pro Football Focus scores tell us he's good each week, but, like, is he really doing that much for you?
I don't know. And I think, honestly, too, it was also kind of like a team chemistry thing. I'm not sure he was like a D'Amico Ryans guy.
I think that's it.
And like you said, he's coming up. He's going to want another contract. They were not going to give him that. So you might as well get back as much as you can now. Hopefully Blake Fisher works out. Ugh. But, I mean, it is what it is. Like you said, you can't get much worse. So why not?
Ruben?
Yeah, I understand that he can't get much worse, but you knew that there was a problem with the other four, not the left tackle spot. C.J. Stroud was the second most sacked quarterback in the NFL. Now, you are taking away a five-time Pro Bowl left tackle from him. I just feel like there are certain players in leagues where there has to be some exceptions. And I understand he false starts a lot, I mean, almost every single game. I understand there are some penalties. But when it comes to protecting the quarterback, Laremy Tunsil excels at that and does it really well. And now I understand why they made the move. Money-wise, you were going to have to make a decision 2 years down the line, like Brian brought up. I am concerned for this offensive line. I am more concerned for C.J. Stroud, who was, like I mentioned already, the second most sacked quarterback in the league. Now you're taking away his best O-lineman.
Yeah, let's remember what happened in the Super Bowl, right? Patrick Mahomes was absolutely destroyed. They made the Eagles' defensive front and their pass rush made the Chiefs look awful.
Yeah,
he was pressured at a rate in that game less than the average pressure rate C.J. Stroud faced during the regular season. And that a lesser pressure rate destroyed Patrick Mahomes, the greatest quarterback we've seen from the last decade, right? So that's kind of where I'm looking at with this. I get it from the Caserio side, from the money and everything involved. You're strapped against the cap. And you need some room. You need some picks. You only had six picks before this move was made. Now you add a couple on. So I get all that, but I'm old enough to remember David Carr. Look, I'm not trying to put that evil on him.
What was it, 78 sacks his first season or whatever?
Yeah. It was 70-something. It was a record at the time. Look, I'm not saying they're there yet, but if you don't improve the offensive line, and we're going to get into, like, do they actually have a path to improve the offensive line, because I'm very skeptical. But if you don't improve the offensive line and you go into the 2025 season with – even or lesser than offensive line than what you had in 2024, I'm starting to get the fear that you're running the risk of David Carring C.J. Stroud. Because we saw the – I don't know if you guys saw Matthew Berry, the fantasy football guy.
Uh-huh.
He was talking to NFL execs at the Combine and asked them, like, hey, what happened with C.J. Stroud this year? It's like, well, it's simple. The offensive line was terrible. He got hit and he got the yips. And that's kind of, I don't think it's unfair. Like, I don't blame C.J. Stroud for his dip in production entirely. I mostly place it on Sloak and the offensive line. But if you give him the same offensive line or worse again, aren't you kind of running the risk of, you know, damaging his development as a quarterback?
I mean, you are. I mean, unless they're looking at it, like, from the point of view of, just like a normal sophomore slump. Like, now it's his third year. It doesn't matter.
That's risky business, Cam.
I'm not saying that's the best way to look at it, but that could be how they're looking at it. But no, I mean, I get everything that y'all are saying. Like, the fact that the offensive line technically got worse after CJ having been sacked the second most high times, like, in the league last year, I don't know. I mean,
it's scary.
It's scary, yeah, but.
But what's your fear level with this, Ruben?
Well, dude, it has to be at an 8 or a 9. Like you said, we saw with David Carr. You know who else we saw it with? Number 4, constantly running for his life.
Yeah.
Now we are seeing it with C.J. Stroud. And I said in that game against the Green Bay Packers, when you saw C.J. Stroud grab his helmet and throw it on the floor, Houston, we have a problem. And then as the season went on, we started to see the yips. We started to see the ghost on the field. And then he went through, I believe, 3 games where he faced a career high in pressure rates back to back to back. Like you just said, Cam, the offensive line got worse. I am very worried for C.J. Stroud because of the history of what I've seen with other top draft picks here in Houston. We just cannot protect them.
Yeah, see, what you said was great, but I kind of stopped listening after you said, Houston, we have a problem. I don't know if I'm alone in that one, but man, that line gets me. But you're right. Like, I remember what you're talking about in the Packer game. Like, he showed frustration this year at times. I give him credit because it wasn't constant. Like, he wasn't constantly doing that, but he did show frustration at times this year that we didn't see, obviously, in year one where it was going pretty well. So can they actually, you know, can they use what they got for Laremy Tunsil, the cap savings, which I believe Texans cap said it was about 13 and change. Can they use the second and third round pick, although the second round pick won't come until the 2026 draft. You only really have the third rounder this year plus the seventh, but that doesn't really matter. Can you actually use that to give C.J. Stroud, you know, a better offensive line, or at least equal in talent, and then hope your new play caller and your promoted offensive line coach make the difference? So far, all they've done is added Lakin Tomlinson and Ed Ingram, who I'm sure a lot of people listening to this are saying, who? And they're right, because you basically The other move, obviously, being you traded Kenyon Green earlier, or you know, right after the Laremy Tunsil thing, you basically replaced Kenyon Green with Kenyon Green, who wore different uniforms last year, because Kenyon Green last year was the he was the third worst offense or third worst left guard, actually just guards total, so third worst offensive guard in 1-on-1 pressure rate allowed, third worst.
Oof.
Tomlinson, Lakin Tomlinson, fourth worst. And Ed Ingram, first worst.
Oh,
so but all they did, all they did was rip Green off the back of the jersey and slap Tomlinson or Ingram on. I'm trying to. Nick Caserio has done some amazing things. I loved his aggressiveness in going to get Will Anderson. He's obviously been a miracle man with what he's found in the draft at defensive back and wide receiver. I mean, obviously, Nico Collins, a third-round pick. I mean, Kamari Lassiter was a great pick. Tank Dell, if he could ever stay healthy and stop being an offensive blocker, was a great pick. But, like, I'm starting to worry about his evaluation at offensive line. Like, I mean, obviously, the Kenyon Green trade or pick was a disaster. Juice Scruggs has been, And now he's going out and replacing Kenyon Green with two Kenyon Greens. So I'm trying to look at the path forward for the Texans. We'll carry some of this conversation over into the next segment. But, I mean, maybe talk me down off the ledge. Like, I'm looking at what they've done
I'm
so
up
far.
There with you, man.
Oh, you're up there with
I'm
him?
I'm up there with...
I mean, we're, I mean, like,
I,
they
I wish I could
King
talk you
Green
off, but I'm up there with you. So we're all on the edge.
AJ, are you on the ledge, too? I mean, you're a Cowboys fan. You're always on the ledge, but...
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, hey.
That first sack from the left side is going to have a lot of people talking. I tell you that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, Jeremy brought up on the Killer Bees. It wasn't Thursday. We were off Thursday, so it must have been Wednesday. He brought up, could the Laremy trade be viewed someday worse than the DeAndre Hopkins trade, which obviously is the OG of bad trades, or at least going back in modern times. We don't want to go way back to 2003 or whatever. But in their point overall was like, no, it's not going to be that way because Hopkins was, wide receiver inherently is a sexier position than left tackle, blah, blah, blah. And I get that aspect of it. But, Ruben, you mentioned something there, like that first pressure they face off the left side. Can you imagine if they let Laremy Tunsil go and let's, we'll talk about how they reshuffle the offensive line, who plays where in the next segment. But with whoever's basically taking that spot, or one of your new Kenyon Greens to replace the old Kenyon Green, and all of a sudden CJ gets hurt and he's seriously hurt. Like, I think in that scenario where you replace these guys with, who Casario's brought in, you get that move directly results in CJ Stroud getting seriously hurt, like an RG3 situation. And then I think we're talking about Laremy Tunsil trade worse than DeAndre Hopkins. That's the scenario. Now, it is a dark path. I know I've led us down the darkest timeline. If this is the multiverse, and we're talking about all the infinite possibilities of how this thing could play out, but that is
in this one.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of the fate of the Houston sports fan, unfortunately. I think. I mean, I've lived it for my entire life, but
I mean, the Hopkins trade was bad because Bill O'Brien was just a head ass. Like that was
head ass.
That was a Bill.
I haven't heard that one.
That
before.
Was a Bill okay. O'Brien.
Well, he was
move.
Mad about the baby mom.
Yeah,
apparently.
At least with the Tunsil trade, at least you got back equal, I feel like, equal value. So that's why, like, it's hard for me to, like, compare.
Were you disappointed they didn't get a first, though?
No. I mean, it's, what is he,
I mean, a
10
second,
years in the league now?
A second and third is, I'm not poo-pooing it. Second and third is good value. But I think if we had told most Texans fans, hey, you trade Laremy Tunsil, what do you get back? They're like, oh, you're getting a first. I think that, at least that's my read on what the expectation was, because I'd heard Lance Zierlein talking about, because he's wanted Ronnie Stanley. Obviously, Ronnie Stanley re-signed Baltimore, so that went away. But his thought was, you could get a first for Laremy.
Really? That's crazy. I would have never...
I'm not going to kill the Texans for not getting a first, but I just wonder if we're a little disappointed that it wasn't a first.
I never... Well, one, I didn't expect them to trade Tunsil.
No,
but two,
true.
I would have never thought that they would be able to get a first-round pick for him. So... when I saw what they got back, I was like, oh, okay, like they got something, like they got a good return, but a first, that seems extreme. Like I don't know who would give up a first for Laremy right now.
Well, certainly not Washington, apparently.
Well, clearly, it's yeah.
Clearly not Washington. All right, let's carry this conversation over to the other side of the break. Kind of start to look forward. We can't change anything about the Laremy Tunsil trade now, so let's look forward and discuss how the Texans can or can't get any better on the offensive line during the rest of this offseason. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, Ruben Gomez, and AJ behind the glass. Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Don't go anywhere.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back into the Bullpen. If you want to join in the conversation, give us a call or a text on the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Myself, Brian McDonald with you, Ruben Gomez, and Cam Smith, along with AJ behind the glass. So we were talking about the Texans' offensive line in this last segment, and we'll continue that conversation now. Look, let's get past, you know, what they actually did with Laremy Tunsil, because obviously we can't change it. Laremy's not coming back. He's in Washington now. How can they get better? And we spent part of that, we talked about part of that conversation with the additions of Laken Tomlinson and Ed Ingram. And if you missed that part of the conversation, I think I wrecked Ruben and Cam a little bit by letting them know that they replaced Kenyon Green with two guys who were the same as Kenyon Green last year. Two guys who lost their job and were near the top, and in one case higher than Kenyon Green in 1-on-1 pressure rate allowed by guards. So I don't go into next season thinking, okay, Laken Tomlinson, Ed Ingram, good to go. Rubber stamp it. Let's move on. So you start to look at the offensive line, and I think we're pretty sure your tackles in some order, either left or right, are going to be Titus Howard and Blake Fisher. I think most people will probably assume Titus is left and Blake Fisher is right, but you know, could flip. I'm not sure. So the real conversation begins, all right, what happens at left guard, center, right guard? And I think on paper right now, if you had to start the season tomorrow, your left guard, center, right guard would be left guard Laken Tomlinson, center Jarrett Patterson, and right guard Juice Scruggs, which is terrifying. So let's hear from Matt Miller right now, because obviously you look at that offensive line, and this was a conversation from the Killer Bees. Check out the full conversation on the podcast page. But we had Matt Miller on, ESPN draft expert. You can find him on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout. And we asked him a conversation like, okay, they need offensive linemen. We obviously know the Texans have to get offensive linemen, probably multiple in this draft. How is this year's draft class as far as the talent offensive line?
Yeah, this is not a great offensive line draft. I'll just be honest with you. It's okay. Not. And I think teams know that. And we've seen the way that guys like Jalen Moore and Dan Moore are getting paid big-time starter money, even though they've not been premier starters in the NFL, shows us how teams feel about this offensive line class.
So, not good. Not good. So that is obviously a problem. If there's not really the offensive lineman there to replace what you need, that would certainly be a problem. One more for Matt Miller. Okay, the offensive linemen there aren't in the draft, but are Titus Howard and Blake Fisher enough at tackle to compete in the AFC?
I think, man, it could be. And with Titus Howard, is such a, I feel like he's still such a work in progress, even though he's been in the league since 2019, right? It's like he was such a piece of clay that needed molded. And I liked Blake Fisher a lot coming out last year. So, like, I'm intrigued, I think, by it, especially for Blake Fisher, more so than Titus Howard. But, like, Blake could be a really good right tackle. That was the grade on him coming out, right? And so, man, we'll see. It's going to be fascinating. I think in the AFC, you know, you've got some really, really good pass rushers in that division, in that conference. A lot is going to be put on Titus Howard early. And I think it's almost kind of smart to, like, force the issue, because if it doesn't work, well, then you know going into the 2026 draft that you got to get a tackle and you got to get one in the first round. You know, tackles are seldom found outside of the first round that become really, really good players.
So there you have it. I think Matt Miller at times was trying to sugarcoat it for us. Like, you can hear, it's like, well, we'll see. It'll be interesting.
Could be.
This guy's he's a piece of clay still needing to be molded. So I didn't take a lot from what Matt Miller said as super encouraging. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I'm with them. Like Tytus Howard and Blake. Like if I'm trying to take the mindset of be as optimistic as I possibly can, swarm, put on my battle red sunglasses, you know, grill up some burgers with Cal, all that sort of thing. Throw up the H. If I'm looking at it through that mindset, I could talk myself into saying or believing that is that Tytus Howard and Blake Fisher are going to be adequate enough at tackle. I can't talk myself into that same mindset on the interior offensive line. So that's kind of where you look at this draft. And I do think there are some interesting names, but like you may, let's say you get one of them at 25. Like, are the same level of talent going to be there in the second round? You have two third round picks. Are they going to be there? Like, we've had people come on the air and say, you know, use every draft pick on the offensive line, which ignores the fact that you have needs at, you know, wide receiver and other place. But like, I don't think beyond the guy you get at 25, I don't think there's going to be enough talent there in the draft to be able to fix this line this year. And Matt Miller said at the end, like, well, you'll find out and you'll know what you have to do in 2026. We can't wait for 2026. CJ needs to be protected this year.
Might have to.
This defense is ready to win a Super Bowl now. This is a Super Bowl level defense. Joe Mixon is a upper, you know, five, like top five, top 10 running back. Nico Collins is an upper level wide receiver. They have the pieces other than that offensive line to go win a Super Bowl or at least compete for it. But that offensive line, especially the interior offensive line, I just don't see a path for it to improve during this offseason.
Yeah, and I mean, my initial thought was like, oh, well, they're going to have to build from the draft. But he makes a good point. Like, looking at all the like the draft grades for offensive linemen, there are a few tackles that are first and second round talent. But even some of their reviews are, well, they might have to flop to the guard.
Yeah, like Kelvin Banks from Texas.
Yeah, like the best guard right now, and I was talking to Lance about this, is like Tate Ratledge. And he's got like a third round grade. So it's just kind of like, Miller made a good point. Like, there's not a whole lot of like exceptional talent on the O-line, especially at guard and center this year. So,
I think you could get one starter out of the draft. Obviously you got to hit, but I think there's enough talent. I mean, you mentioned a name there with Rutledge, but I think there's enough talent where you can get one starter. But then let's say that replaces Lake and Tomlinson. Are you feeling good about Jarrett and Juice being your other two interior offensive linemen?
Not really.
No.
Ruben, how are you feeling about this?
No, and I actually think Juice Scruggs might be your starting center in 2025. I don't think the Houston Texans want to give up on him just yet. I do think your right guard is Ed Ingram. And I know his stats are very poor in Minnesota, but he started 3 years and I believe 9 games this season until he was benched and, you know, never seen again. New offensive line coach and Cole Popovich, maybe a change of scenery is what he needs. But I think that is your starting offensive line. And, Cam, you talked about the draft. Some of the best tackles, they're thinking, hey, maybe they do have to move to guard. And, you know, Will Campbell out of LSU, Josh Simmons out of the Ohio State, I don't think they'll be there at 25 for the Houston Texans. You might have to trade up and go get your left tackle. You talked about the ledge, how close you are. I might be even closer up than you, man.
He might be, like, and
he's leaning on.
Like, yeah, we're barely hanging
I'm
on.
I'm getting
here.
The Michael Jackson. I'm there.
But like, it kind of highlights, I think, a problem I have with Nick Caserio's strategy, and maybe he put himself in a position. Not that this is an excuse where he had no other choice, but I don't like going into the draft where you're relying on only being able to fix your problems in the draft, right? Like, there were guys, now some of the offensive linemen that went during free agency went for way more money than they could have ever could afford it. But one name that sticks out that I was on, I think Cam, you and I talked about this a few weeks ago, but Kevin Zeitler.
Mm. Yeah.
Like Kevin Zeitler was a name, like because he's an older guy, you know, he's still playing pretty well. He was on the Lions last year, but because of his age, I believe he's 34, you were going to be able to get him on a reasonable deal for both years and money. And he went for the exact, like when you and I talked about it, Cam, the Spotrac projection was 1 year, $9 million. He went for exactly 1 year, $9 million. Like,
yeah.
That is a move. Like, if you sign Kevin Zeitler, like, okay, I could talk myself into Tytus Howard and Blake Fisher. Kevin Zeitler, you know, is one of your guards, and I'm feeling good about that. I let Juice and Jarrett Patterson, you know, compete for the center spot. I feel good about that. And then you draft, you know, someone at 25 to play the other guard position. Wipe your hands and you're feeling pretty good going into the season. But
what could have been?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is what's the Marvel show? What if? But instead, because they didn't make more moves in free agency, you're going into a spot where you're kind of relying on there not being an offensive line run in front of you, or having to be accurate with, you know, the only pick in the offensive line. They've got needs at backup running back, at wide receiver. They might only pick one offensive lineman with their first three picks. Like, if you don't hit on that guy, if you can't afford to just draft all offensive linemen and you don't hit on that guy, I mean, you're now in a spot because you didn't make moves in free agency where you're really, your back's up against the wall. I just don't like the strategy of going to the draft with such a glaring need, because now you put yourself in a spot where, one, you have to be right. You don't give yourself any flexibility. And you also tell every team around you, like, if I want guard and I'm picking 28, guess where I'm trading up to? 24, right in front of the Texans. Yeah. So I just don't like the strategy there from Nick Caserio. Ruben?
No, I 100% agree. The fact that other teams know that I need to go into the draft and select an offensive lineman, makes me very uneasy. You guys brought up Kevin Zeitler. That was my guy even before Laremy Tunsil was traded out. And I'm not going to blame anyone for wanting to play close to the family, but that 1 year, $9 million, that does kind of sting. If we would have been here talking about Kevin Zeitler as your right guard, we would have been feeling a lot better about this offensive line. Want to throw out a question. A center who has just become available, Garrett Bradbury from the Minnesota Vikings. They brought in Ryan Kelly.
Right, from the Colts.
And after the move with Ed Ingram, I was thinking, what if we see one of those 6th, 7th round picks being traded to them for a Garrett Bradbury who's in the final year of his contract, 30 years old? When it comes to me, you have a franchise quarterback. Your sense of urgency needs to be at an all-time high.
I mean, I'm all for throwing a 6th, 7th round pick at them if they're willing to do that. I mean, obviously the Texans have done that to some success with Joe Mixon last year, Christian Kirk this year.
Yeah.
I've said before, I'm in favor of the Texans never making a pick in the 7th round again, just throwing that 7th round pick to guys who are about to be released and just never picking the 7th round ever again. But yeah, I'd be willing to give Bradbury a try. I don't think it's the fix-all, but certainly what they have right now in the interior offensive line isn't the fix. So
what's the worst that could happen,
right,
by bringing him?
Yeah,
in?
Like if it takes a 6th round pick, I don't think they have a 6th round pick. Yeah, they don't have a 6th round pick. But you have 2 7ths, your own plus the one you got from Washington in the Tunsil trade. So if it takes a 7th to bring Bradbury in and the Vikings are just going to cut him anyway, why not? I'm not convinced it's the magic wand that fixes everything.
It's the Band-Aid.
Yeah, that's the problem. I think this offseason has been a lot of Band-Aids being put on bullet wounds. That's kind of what this offseason's been.
And to add on to, like, the inconsistency of the offensive line is, we've almost seen this, like, when we talked about, like, the Astros with, like, their starters and their relievers. Starting, being a reliever. It's like what we're seeing with the Texans' offensive line. Guard. Tackle. Like, we've seen Howard go from guard to tackle. We've seen Juice go from center to guard. We've seen Patterson go guard to center. Like, none of these guys seem like they have an actual, like, fit. So I think with the Bradbury thing is, if you bring him in, you know exactly where he's going to play. He's going to play at center.
Yeah,
and that gives you some sort of comfort because of, we don't know where Patterson and Scruggs are. Suggs are, because they keep flip-flopping their positions.
And that would have been another thing I think that would have been helpful with if you'd signed Kevin Zeitler. Because, I mean, you know he's going to be
exactly
one of the two guard positions, so you're locking those other two guys in. One nice thing about Bradbury, which was also the selling point at Ed Ingram, but I don't buy it for Ed Ingram, but one of the nice selling points for if you do bring in Bradbury is from Minnesota, Kevin O'Connell, obviously Nick Caley come in as your OC now with the Texans, both being under the Sean McVay tree at one point. So you would hope that the offensive terminology, the plays, the style of the running game, all that sort of thing would be at least familiar to Bradbury. He wouldn't have to start all over again. But let's carry over part of this conversation and get into, on the other side, some of the big moves in the NFL. And also, we got to talk about the other side of the Kenyon Green trade, bringing in Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, the safety from the Eagles. How much does that improve the Texans' defense? That, when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio, 97.5 and 92.5.
This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Brian McDonald, Ruben Gomez, Cam Smith, and our man AJ behind the glass. If you want to join in the conversation, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So we've talked, you know, for the entire 30-plus minutes of the show so far, basically about the bad things that have happened for the Texans the offseason. And I think I know what the answer is going to be for this because it's pretty much the obvious one. But what has been your favorite move so far that the Texans have made during this short offseason so far? And I'll go ahead and go first with my answer because I think it's Cam's laughing because I don't know if he has a positive. It's like, that they had fun and they remained their friends. I think he's going to give us that answer. But my part of it is like Kenyon Green was trash. I think we could openly say that. That's not an unfair statement.
Be careful. His dad might DM me on Instagram.
Oh, that's even come at me. I don't care. At Sacked by BMAC on Twitter. I got nothing but time. But look, Kenyon Green, respectfully, Mr. Green, was trash as an offensive player on the Texans, and you were able to send him to Philadelphia, which honestly, to actually defend Kenyon Green a little bit, with the way we've seen Philadelphia develop offensive linemen, I think there's a chance that Kenyon Green can actually develop there. But that's neither here nor there. No. Let's just move past it. It's meaningless. I'm just throwing it out there.
Brandon Brooks Pro 2?
maybe. But no, you get back a starting safety with C.J. Gardner-Johnson, a dude that just totally embodies the swarm mentality of D'Amico Ryans, a guy that's just a dog on the field, loves to talk trash. We don't have time for it, but there's so many videos out there of him talking trash to Michael Thomas, to a few other guys that he gets into verbal spats with all the time. But to turn Kenyon Green, who was putting it nicely, a minus at his position, to a starting safety with C.J. Gardner-Johnson was a brilliant move by Nick Caserio.
Oh, yeah. I loved that move, but what you said prior to that...
I triggered you.
not even triggered. Like, now I just feel even worse because it's just like, oh, great. Kenyon Green was trash. We send him to Philly and he might develop. Like, what the does that say about the Texans being able to develop people?
I think that,
like,
says,
oh,
that
God,
they had an offensive play caller, an offensive line coach that needed to be fired.
Mm. Oh, and that happened. No, yeah. I love the mood. I mean, or the move to get a Gardner. I mean, they were already relatively deep and good at the secondary, and now I think this puts them almost like elite status to be in the secondary. And I think there's Philadelphia ties because D'Amico played in Philly.
Sure.
So he probably monitors that situation over there. So, no, I really love that move. I honestly thought that the Texans, what am I trying to say? Like, they, Philly took a big L with this one, I feel like.
I mean, I don't have the list in front of me, but they cut a ton of salary. Sweat's gone. Obviously, C.J. Gardner-Johnson's gone. Your boys, the Chargers, picked up their offensive lineman, Becton. I'm just saying, like, there is a ton of guys that Philadelphia, I mean, maybe not as much as San Francisco, which I don't know if anyone shed more salary than San Francisco this offseason, but the Eagles certainly let a lot of guys go. But, Ruben, your thoughts on the acquisition of C.J. Gardner-Johnson?
You know, this is where you look at GM Nick Caserio and say, you know, let him cook, man. I'll wear as many sweater vests as I want to if you're making trades like that.
Like you're in oil and gas.
Like you're in oil and gas. What was funny for me is the way the trade broke for me is it was on the Bleacher Report app, and all it said was Houston Texans trade Kenyon Green. I'm like, okay, who do we trade for? I see C.J. Gardner-Johnson. I immediately pop right up and yell, we're going to have the best secondary in 2025. C.J. Gardner-Johnson is a dog. There's no other way to put it. 6 interceptions with the Philadelphia Eagles. You talk about the trash talk with Michael Thomas. There's one clip where he looks at Tom Brady. He looks up to him and does the C.J. Stroud pros. Like,
yep.
I love that. You talk about the swarm mentality, special work ethic, and relentless mindset. That is C.J. Gardner-Johnson. You saw him streaming. He traded for himself on Madden. said, let's make it official. And he was acting all crazy in front of the camera saying, Houston, we got a problem, and we absolutely do. C.J. Gardner.
Yeah, TMZ caught up with him right after they won the Super Bowl. He just kept talking, yeah, man, we put belt to ass, belt to ass.
Like, and I love it, too, because
he loves to talk. It's going to be fun.
They would have never done this 2 or 3 years ago. Like, they wouldn't bring these players in. They were trying to get, like, when they were getting rid of Hopkins and Swearinger, all these guys that were confrontational, like, dogs, they were trying to get that out of the locker room, and now it seems like they're bringing back kind of, like, that mentality.
Guys are smarter.
So I appreciate it a whole lot more, yeah.
Like, you look at this defense overall, because they bring back, you know, a guy that was here 2 years ago, Sheldon Rankins. Mm. They resigned Mario Edwards. You still have Tim Settle on the team. Obviously, you have your star two pass rusher. You bring back Nick Barnett as a rotational pass rusher. Your linebackers are still, and they added to the linebacker crew, but there's more depth there. And yeah, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, I mean, you look at that defense. I mean, you know, with your two edge rushers, obviously with Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr. In the interior of the defensive line, you look at Mario Edwards, and I'm assuming Sheldon Rankins, but maybe Tim Settle. We'll see how that breaks down. But you love the defensive line there. You got the rotational pass rushers, especially with Nick Barnett. Your linebackers with Aziz and Christian Harris and Henry Toa took a huge step forward in year two. Are looking pretty good. And you guys talked about the secondary with you getting Jalen Petrie back on that nickel spot. We know how much he loves to hit, how well he plays the run. You're feeling great about your corners with Lassiter and Derek Stingley. And now to Cam Bullock, who was a great, you know, rookie of the year type candidate safety last year. You add to that C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Like, this defense on paper, because we all know how things like that go in the offseason, but on paper, this is a defense talented enough to win a Super Bowl. Now, we spent the last two segments talking about all the reasons that complicate that scenario, because the offensive line has a large way to grow, but the defense looks like a Super Bowl defense.
It is, and like it's crazy to think about like their secondary, because it almost reminds me of like the Dana Holgorsen days back at like West Virginia when they kept running that 3-3-5,
yeah,
because the secondary was so good. It was like you have to put five guys out there at the time. I feel like this is kind of the route that they're going now, because there's that secondary has so many dudes in it. It's just like, how do you not play these guys?
Oh, Petrie will basically be a starter. That's just the way the NFL is now. Like, guys, I wish I had the exact percentages in front of me, but teams play so little base. Like, if you're like the Texans are a base 4-3, they don't spend much time in like a base 4-3. They're a nickel. Like,
well, Petrie's 80, damn near 85. A linebacker,
right? Like, exactly. They're going to be in nickel with Petrie as a starter like 80-85% of the time, maybe even more. So, like, I mean, yeah, the five secondary look, like, it's not quite the 3-3-5 like Holgorsen ran at West Virginia, but the five secondary look will definitely be something they deploy quite a bit. But, Ruben, I think I already know the answer, but it seems like you're feeling pretty optimistic about this defense. I mean, already before that, but especially after the add of C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Absolutely. I was saying that this is a Super Bowl caliber defense, and that was even before we added C.J. Gardner-Johnson. And now you just added, you know, one of the best safeties in this league. We're swarming here, and we haven't seen a fully healthy Christian Harris on this D'Amico Ryans defense at his full capacity. You know, towards the end of the first year, we saw him one of the best players on the defensive side for the Texans, picking off Joe Flacco, going after Lamar Jackson. We get to see a healthy Christian Harris alongside of Aziz and Henry Tuatua, who you brought up. This defense is going to be real scary.
Absolutely. All right. Let's, on the other side of the break, I'm glad we got some positive in, because now I'm going to have to talk about Jose Altuve. And he had a little bit of an adventure out in left field a few days ago. We got to talk about those Astros. Their season, believe it or not, the season starts for them a week from Thursday. I mean, it's coming up real quick, and ball's coming up pretty quick on Jose Altuve, also out there in left field. That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Order for Jennifer C.
Is this my double shot, double cream, double froth, double pump, double whip, double sleeve?
Yeah. Can you handle that much caffeine?
Did you know Discover automatically doubles all the cash back you've earned at the end of your first year?
Oh, really? That's great.
Seriously, did you know Discover automatically doubles all the cash back you've earned at the end of your first year?
Yeah, you just said that.
Did you say I just said that?
Yeah, I'm cutting you off.
I can't have any more? Why not?
You earn, we match. Discover cashback match. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What if your limited inventory had unlimited potential? What if your biggest risk was not taking one? What if you could make every move matter? Bank of America's business solutions can help bring your biggest what-ifs within reach. Find out how our digital tools, cutting-edge insights, and trusted expertise can work for your business. What would you like the power to do? Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. Bank of America is proud to be the official bank sponsor of FIFA World Cup 2026.
John Granato here with Dr. Manavese from Access Vascular Health. We've been talking about prostates, but let's talk about knees now, how you're helping people with arthritis.
We'll start off seeing if you would need an injection or benefit from that. Then we'll assess to see if you're getting enough blood flow to and from your lower extremities. And we'll end with seeing if you would be a candidate for GAE.
And the success rate is amazing.
The technical success rate is 99.7%.
So if you're experiencing any knee problems, go to 975prostate.com and click on the knee tab.
Hi, this is Sean with Greenlight Offer, and I buy houses cash. If you own a house and want to sell it fast at a fair price, I'm your guy. Call me at 832-779-4000. I can pay cash and close in as little as 3 days. I buy houses in any condition, any price range, and any location in the Houston area. I'm a local real estate investor who buys several houses a month, and I want to buy more. I buy inherited houses, vacant houses, behind in payment houses. I even buy my tenant won't pay me the rent houses. Do you own a house that is trash and needs thousands of dollars in repairs? That's fantastic, because I love buying junk houses too. Skip all the hassle and headache of listing, dealing with agents, showings, and who knows what else. If you own a house and want to sell it fast, give me a call today. Sean at Greenlight Offer Buying Houses. Call me at 832-779-4000. That's 832-779-4000. Call for Sean with Greenlight Offer, and I'll get your Greenlight number on your house today.
John Granato here with Yanni Damaris from Damaris Barbecue. How many all-you-can-eat ribs can I eat?
As many ribs as you could possibly eat, John. I'm really not worried about you. I would want you to come in and get that.
It's unlimited.
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 All you can eat.
And you got two different ribs, right?
I do. Baby backs and the spare ribs.
You got the sweet sauce on the baby backs?
The baby backs are sweet and spicy. And they're really, really good.
Damaris Barbecue, two locations. One's on 610 at 18th Street. The other's at Shepherd, just north of West Alabama. Or you can order ahead at Damaris.com.
Hey, man. It's Chance McClain. I used to work here, but I got fired. And for the last decade, I've been making epic family documentaries at Heritage Films. Imagine this. Your grandkids watching a movie about you or your parents. Yes, you're the star. We capture your stories and create a legacy film so good, Spielberg would be jealous. Don't let those stories fade. Visit yourheritagefilm.com. Yourheritagefilm.com. Make your life the blockbuster it deserves to be.
This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into the bullpen. ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Brian McDonald, Ruben Gomez, and Cam Smith with you. And our man, AJ, behind the glass, who I knew would come through with some Nirvana before the day was over. AJ's very consistent with that, and I love him for it. Let's talk about something that maybe won't be consistent this year. Like that transition, Cam? How was that?
That was beautiful.
That was beautiful, wasn't it? The defensive play of Jose Altuve, and before we get into our thoughts and probably more of our concerns and our hand-wringing and our pearl-clutching over Jose Altuve playing left field, let's hear this play-by-play of Jose Altuve going back to a ball that was hit to the wall and not playing it so well.
This one hit high in the air to left field, wind blowing out that way. Will Altuve have a chance at the wall? He kind of mistimed his jump. It went off the wall, and Jake Meyers is going to try and play it back into third base, sliding in with a triple. Izzybon Herrera.
So if you haven't seen the play, it's exactly how Todd Callis describes it, and shout out to Space City Home Network there for that play-by-play. But there's a ball hit to the wall. Jose Altuve seemingly can't find where, like, you see him, like, reaching out, like, he's trying to find the wall to gauge where he is, never finds it, ball bounces, like, right by him off the wall, and has to be thrown in by Jake Meyers, and the player at bat winds up with the triple. So I've seen a lot of people losing their mind, like, all the fears we had, because up until that moment, I think Jose Altuve had been pretty adequate in left field. We've seen him make a few plays at the wall going back, getting good jumps on the ball. good reaction time, all the things you need to see from an outfielder. But that one play, I think, brought everyone back to, holy crap, Jose Altuve is going to kill us in left field with this defense. So are you guys with the freaking out, or where are you at right now, Cam, with Jose Altuve's defense in left field?
I mean, I'm not freaking out, but I don't know why he's out there. And look, yeah. I am in no way comparing myself to Jose Altuve, but as somebody that played baseball, no.
Are you Paul Gallant talking about high school football right now?
As somebody that literally played second base and outfield, I can tell you they are completely opposite. There is nothing comparable about those two positions. So assuming that a great second baseman can just transition to the outfield.
I mean, Biggio did it.
Yeah, but it's not like Biggio was great.
I know. I'm mostly egging you on right now.
But like, it's asinine to think that Jose can just transition to the outfield and everything's going to be okay. And like, I get at the time when they were talking about doing it because there was talk about Bregman still coming back to the team. Bregman never came back to the team. So why do we need to say Jose in the outfield? Why can't he just stay at second base? And why can't you just play Dubon in the outfield where we've seen Dubon play 1,000 times? Like, I do not understand this.
I think the reasoning would be, and I'm pretty sure you're going to disagree with it, obviously, from what you just said. But the thought process is, because all the defensive metrics have shown that Altuve, since he won the Gold Glove in like 2015, 2016, whenever it was, like, since that point, his defense has dropped off to a point where he is, like, losing you 8 runs a season. Like, one of the worst guys in the league at second base. So I think the thought process, if we put him at second base, he's a poor defensive player. If we put him in left field, he's a poor defensive player. But because second base is a more of a premium defensive position, especially when you got guys like Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown who are ground ball pitchers, they'd rather live with the amount of errors and bad plays that he'll see in left field versus second base, because you're going to see more action at second base. You can hide them when you're at home because of the Crawford boxes.
And I get that, but my thing is, it's almost like the outfield is like your last line of defense. So at second base, if he bobbles a ball or he misplays something, there are people behind him to kind of cover that up. In the outfield, if something gets over his head, we're going to wait for Jake Meyers to run over?
Well, thankfully, Jake Meyers is really fast.
True.
That's my other concern, too, is
God, our outfield is literally going to be Altuve, Meyers, and McCormick.
Like, to start the year, most likely, yeah.
I'm about to have apoplexy, like, thinking of this. I'm going to have a stroke.
You're going to have it? Wow, okay. I mean, I can't. AJ, make sure the stream is going.
Maybe I am freaking out, if there is a stroke.
I think that could be. I will promote that on Twitter if you're about to have a stroke. Like, tune in on YouTube. See a man have a stroke about Jose Altuve's defense. I think that's good for ratings. Jose Altuve, here's the problem they put themselves in, right? Yordan Alvarez is not a plus defender. Jose Altuve, not a plus defender. They can't both play DH. So wherever one of them plays while the other one's DHing, you're going to have a liability there.
Yeah.
So it's really a question of, where do you most feel comfortable having the liability? And I think the answer, and I get your concern about it, but when you have the benefit of the Crawford boxes, the short left field at home for half your games, I think the answer is hide them in left field. Especially now, I will concede to you, like, maybe when Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown aren't on the mound, maybe you do put Altuve at second base, and it's a more of a, he splits the season. But when Framber Valdez specifically is on the mound, I do not want Jose Altuve at second base, because one thing we know about Framber Valdez.
Ground ball.
Well, ground ball pitcher, yes, but you mentioned, like, oh, if he misplays the ball, you know, there's someone behind him, you know, maybe he lives up a single, but it's not a double turning in triple or inside the park home run, like kind of what happened in that play we heard. But what does happen is when those things happen to Framber Valdez, he melts down.
Yeah.
And so that's it's like, specifically with Framber Valdez, you know, beyond anyone else, like, I do not ever want Jose Altuve at second base when Framber Valdez is pitching. How have you felt about this situation, Ruben, with Jose Altuve in left field?
You know, I think you articulated it very well when you, you know, pulled me off the ledge. If the Astros do play it smart and take advantage of a, you know, of a short field, what's it called now? The chill box? No longer called the Crawford boxes?
No, I think it's still going to be called the Crawford boxes. I mean, the nickname now, instead of the juice box, will be like the ice box.
Okay.
But I think the Crawford boxes Cam doesn't like that, which I get that I don't really like it either. It's kind of a lame nickname. But, yeah, Crawford boxes still the Crawford boxes.
Yeah, but no, you spelled it out perfectly. If the Astros do play it smart, you minimize the damage of Jose Altuve's, kind of declining at the second base position. I think that is the smart play for the Astros going forward. However, it is kind of weird seeing him, out in the outfield. You're thinking, this is Jose Altuve, the, Hall of Famer, arguably one of the second baseman of all time, and now he's in the outfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is very weird. There's something, and it's not fair at all because, I mean, how many plays leaping up over the walls anyone really going to make on a regular basis in the season? But something about seeing a 5-5 outfielder is just...
That's the other thing. I'm just like, weird. What?
we got to be, I think people remember George Springer and Kyle Tucker at times leaping up and making plays over the wall. That's not really... I mean, how many times is that going to happen over the course of 162 games?
Well,
two or three.
It's never going to happen with Altuve.
Good point. Good. Okay, fair. You know what? I will concede that point. It went from three times to zero. I will concede that point. So, all right, let's talk about something a little more encouraging. Lance McCullers Jr. is being reported he will start the Tuesday night spring training game for the Astros, gentlemen. Lance McCullers is returning to a game that, doesn't count, but sort of counts, or at least counts more than the bullpen sessions he's been having, which... by all reports, have gone well. His velocity's there. He's hitting 94 on the upper end. His velocity has stayed, no lower than 91 in those, which was up from 89 earlier when pitchers and catchers first reported. He's pitched to guys like Christian Walker, Jake Myers, and a few others. They've all said he looks good. He's striking people out in those simulated at-bats, which maybe says a lot more about Jake Myers than it does Lance McCullers, but that's for another day. But what is your hype level and your expectation now that Lance McCullers Jr., Cam, is actually going to take the mound again for a game that kind of counts?
I mean, it's the same as last week.
I can't push you a little bit forward?
No.
So you were at a one the last time we brought this up when he was throwing bullpens. Now he's actually going to pitch in a spring training game. I can't even get you to a two?
I mean, I'm excited to see what he does, but I don't have high expectations for him. Like we said last week, he threw 20 pitches. Okay, great. That doesn't mean anything to me. I need to see a whole lot more from him.
I think he threw 40 in this last bullpen camp.
And all right.
I'm 40.
I'm hopeful for him. I just don't have high expectations. I think that his elbow... I don't know. It's still a six. Sorry. It hasn't
changed.
Can we
get him a Winter Soldier arm? That way, you guys know what I'm talking about. I think I went over Cam's head. I mean, I think AJ's with me with the Winter Soldier arm. Yeah, it's got to be made out of vibranium or something, man. But
I know what you're referring
okay,
to.
Okay, you're just shaking your head at me. Like you're either
he's
disapproving
just not
or
excited
you
didn't get it.
I do watch up-to-date movies and shows, sir.
No, you don't. Peek behind the scenes. Every time Cam comes up here at night to run stuff after his long day as a teacher, which Cam Smith molding the minds of future congressmen.
You're welcome, America.
And police officers really worries me. Cam, he's always on his laptop watching Law and Order, SVU, CSI, whatever, all these old ass, 7-year old people shows. But you do keep up on the new movies as well, Cam?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Quickly, Rib, before we go to the break, Lance McCullers hasn't pitched in a game that counts since Game 3 of the World Series in 2022. It's been, to quote Disturbed, it's been a while. What is your overall excitement level for this, for this spring training start for Lance McCullers? And do you have any expectation of, he actually might pitch this season?
I'll give it a 4 out of 5 because of, Lance means to the city of Houston. He bleeds H-Town, H-Town till we drown over here. But Cam is right. I have no expectations no more for Lance because time and time again, what I have learned is I cannot rely on you to be there. And that's not his fault. It's just the way the game goes sometimes. So I am excited that he's out there getting back ready. But my expectations, I have none.
Yeah, I mean, some guys' bodies just don't like playing professional sports. And certainly I would say the shoulder and elbow of Lance McCullers, at least on the right-hand side, doesn't like playing professional baseball.
And the other thing, too, is he was dominant because of his off-speed pitches and, his curveballs. But that was also his downfall. was those pitches. And it's just like,
yeah,
okay.
Now he is throwing those in his bullpen sessions, but like you said, and I will concede the point, it's only 20 pitches. And where kind of like where I've fallen on the excitement level is like, it's more of a wait and see. Like, I'm excited that he's progressing.
Yeah.
Because he didn't progress in 2023. He didn't progress in 2024. So this is something new relative to what we've seen the last couple years. But even though I'm excited about, oh, hey, he's actually progressing from a 20-pitch bullpen to a 40-pitch bullpen to throwing in a spring training game, it's not about can he do it Tuesday, you know, against whoever they're playing in spring training in the Grapefruit League. It's about can he do it 20 times, throwing five innings in a regular season, and then still being having enough in the tank to do it in the postseason.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, it's like, okay, we already know he's not going to start the season with the big league team. Like, he's going to start in AAA. I would guess spend probably a month there, so we're probably looking sometime in May before he comes up. But it's less about can he get to that point and more about when he's actually facing the top level of competition. And like you said, Cam, having to throw more curveballs, having to throw more sliders and pitches that really strain the elbow, you know, like the source of his problem. Can he rebound from that? Can his arm hold up to that sort of workload over 20 plus starts into the postseason? And that's obviously,
and on top
concern.
Of that, it's the contract too. Like, if we were talking about like a minimal contract, oh, he's getting like $10 million a year, whatever, but he got a big contract.
It doesn't look that bad now, though.
I mean, compared to what they've given other people, it doesn't look bad.
It was a decent contract at the time, but like $16 million now, like guys that are barely hanging on to rotation spots getting that now. But all right, we're a little bit over here. On the other side of the break, we're getting into some fun audio, starting with Mike Francesa, who had a bit of a moment talking down to his producers. Only problem was he was live on the air at the time, and it went out for everyone to hear. We'll have some fun with that and more, including Stephen A. Smith laughing at Cowboys fans. That with the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.